as the executive who's being asked to be on a panel, is you ask, what's the objective of this panel and who's in the audience, so that you can make sure that your message isn't a sales pitch, but it is providing value to the audience.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Kristen Arnold. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Kristen. One, she is a professional meeting facilitator and leading authority on moderating panel discussions. Two, she is an award-winning author for the book Boring to Bravel and author of 6 books around teamwork and panel discussions. And three, Kristen isn't all serious business. She's also in search of the perfect olive for a slightly dirty vodka martini. A long search, I'm sure, Kristen.
It has been a long search. So if anybody has like the perfect olive, you let me know.
Or even one close to it.
Just I'll take that. Well, actually, I'll take the vodka martini first, but no. Okay.
Kristen, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thank you, George.
Delighted to be talking with you today. And we're going to look at panels, panel discussions, and in particular, executives and business leaders who might use, and perhaps already are, using speaking on panels as a way of getting their messages out. What can they do better, and how can they take more advantage of it? So let's start. Have you ever seen the perfect panel? Have you ever seen one in action?
Now, wait a minute. Isn't that an oxymoron? Perfect panel, but great alliteration. I like that. Because my brand name is Powerful Panels. So I like the whole alliteration thing there, George. But, I think panels, when done well, are great. They're a great opportunity to kind of get insider knowledge and lean in and get some juicy tidbits and takeaways. Perfect, I don't think you're aiming for perfection, because you're aiming for a really great spontaneous conversation. And there's going to be some blips and burbles and perfection. I think, the old days of panels is maybe the executive would rise and give a speech. And then there might be some questions from the moderator and then some polite applause. And I think that's just boring as all get out. Nobody wants that anymore. Don't you agree, George?
I agree with you. Yes, that format sounds extremely boring. Let's have some argument. Let's have some punches thrown. On that topic, Kristen, is it more exciting and for the audience when there is disagreement among the panelists?
Well, I think that is a version of an exciting panel. Where you have divergent points of view and you want to have an interesting, provocative discussion. And it doesn't have to be fisticuffs or anything. In fact, there was a case study I did that they called it the programmatic punch. And they used fighting metaphors, and they had the stage was like a boxing ring, and they really went all out. It was a lot of fun. But not every panel has to be like that, George. I mean, you could have a panel where everybody actually is in full agreement about the what they're talking about, but they have differences of methods or applications or different perspectives. And so you want to be able to build that kind of holistic, three-dimensional perspective about a topic. So that would be interesting. I'm getting the insider view. I'm getting a perspective that I wouldn't normally hear. So you kind of have to start as the executive who's being asked to be on a panel, is you ask, what's the objective of this panel and who's in the audience, so that you can make sure that your message isn't a sales pitch, but it is providing value to the audience where they are, giving them something that they don't already know. Something that makes them lean in and go, oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting. Or makes them think about something differently to change their mindset. You know, are you informing? Are you influencing? Are you persuading? Like what's the overall panel objective? And then what's your personal objective that should be in alignment with that?
Now, if I'm invited to be on a panel, I might think, oh, goody. All I have to do, I don't have to prepare anything. It's not like preparing a speech. I just show up and answer questions.
I call that show up and throw up. Great. You want to do that, you rock on. But I think you owe your reputation and I think you owe your company's reputation a little bit, not a lot of pre-work because you don't need a lot, but a little bit goes a long, long way. So number one, talk to the panel moderator. Find out like, you know, those pre-calls, you might want to blow them off and send your, you know, executive assistant to go attend them. But really, come on, spend 15 minutes on a phone call. It can't kill you because you want to know what their conversational style is. You want to know what their agenda is. You want to know, are there, you know, what's kind of the format, the flow, so that you can adjust your mental set to be of best value to the audience, right? So if you have the mindset of I'm going to deliver the best value to the audience, then you're going to spend a couple of minutes after that conversation with the panel moderator, and you're going to ask yourself, okay, so what are the three things this audience needs to know, think, do, or feel? What's the three things? And then you've got those three points. This does not take that long. Three points. And then you go, okay, what's a story or an example or a way to bring that idea to life? It might be a prop. It might be a story. It might be a metaphor. It might be like, I wrote a whole book on that, George, Boring to Bravo. There's my little slight pitch. And then you want to think about the last piece is what's the point? What's the example story? And then the last piece is what's your tweetable soundbite? Like, what do you want them to walk away with as a memory of that particular point? So I was just doing a panel. And one of the key points that one of the panelists was saying was be intentional. His point was, don't just show up, throw up. These are my words, not his. Be intentional. It's like, okay, so he used that term two or three times. So that I have a really good immediate recall. So what did that panelist say? What was his key point? What's your takeaway? Be intentional. Duh. Like make it simple for people to understand what your key message is and then have some things that might make it interesting that they remember it.
So it sounds like the panelist should spend some time thinking about the message they want to get across that's going to be useful to the audience and also doing some editing about how can they make their message brief and yet memorable.
Yeah, some headline. You know, because a panel goes very, very quickly. You put three people on a panel, a 30-minute panel, you know, you're only going to get 5, 6, 7 minutes of talking time at all. So any example that you have, you know, telling it at a cocktail party, you've got more time than you do on a panel discussion. You need to shorten it up, tell it a little bit more concisely than you would normally do. So that you might want to practice that. Some people feel confident that they can, you know, condense it on the spot. But, you know, if you really want to shine, you might want to do a little bit of preparation on that.
When a panelist is asked a question, How long should their answer be? Or you know, what's the maximum? How do they know?
That's a really good question, George. And I think that there's no pat answer. I'd love to say, well, you know, no answer should be more than 30 seconds or a minute. That's a nice guideline, I suppose. But it depends on what the topic is, depends on how many panelists, depends on how long the panel is, depends on how extensive the information is. I mean, if we're talking about how to get your intended message across, your answer might be 30 seconds, and then there might be a follow-up question. But if your question is, how do you perform some kind of intricate surgery? Because there's lots of very, very technical panels that go on. It might be a little bit longer, like 30 seconds just doesn't. Oh, the presidential debate. Excuse me, how are you going to solve world hunger? How are you going to solve the climate crisis? 30 seconds, please. I think that actually happened in a Canadian debate, right? About a week ago.
Just do no wrong. When a panelist is answering a question, what phrases or words might they use to let the audience know that this is a brief version of the answer? There's really more I'd like to tell you about, but I can't do that today. How can they signal to the audience that, you know, I'm not as dumb as just these six words I'm going to say?
You can say, I'm not as dumb as these six words are going to say. But something that I like to do is I like to say, well, how about if I headline the answer? And if anybody's interested in more information, contact me. I'll be here. Send me an email, whatever.
Headline the answer. I like that. That's one I haven't heard before. That is useful.
Ah, new information. Yay. Thank you, George.
I would learn new tips from you. The panelists themselves, what can they do to make it look like they actually are supporting each other? You know, it's assumed that they're not arguing, they're not disagreeing, but they're presenting different aspects of a issue, and are coming from different perspectives, but really they agree. How can they support each other?
Yeah, so I think this all starts with how the panel moderator tees up the panel. So I call it a conversational drumbeat. So a lot of panel moderators will revert to what I think you would see in like the 60s and the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, is that I'm going to ask you a question, George, you're going to answer it, and then I'm going to turn to the next person and I'm going to ask a different question, or maybe even the same question. Whoa. And then it feels like a ping pong match, right? So I think that that's okay to get started, especially to introduce people. I like to take the first question and embed kind of the introduction into a carefully crafted question that unveils their position, their point of view, their reason why they're on the panel. So that just gets it started very interesting. But then in the pre-calls and in all the messaging that I send to the panelists, as well as right before we get on stage, is I go, you know, this is a conversation. This is called a panel discussion, not a panel presentation. Right. So let's have a conversation, just like at a dinner party. So it's okay to add, it's okay to interrupt gracefully. You know, there's being a bore, bad person. And then there's interrupting gracefully, like, oh, that's interesting. Let me add to that. Or I have a different perspective. Or, you know, and part of it is allowing the panelists to know that it's safe to do that. And that maybe they can lean forward if they're interested or have some kind of cue to each other. I mean, I like in this virtual world, just lean forward. And that kind of lets people know, oh, Kristen wants to say something, right? Oh, and if you're not, you know, you're not wanting to say anything, you lean back a little bit more. But if I lean forward, you know that I want to add something. So then, George, you could say, hey, Kristen, you wanted to add something. So that looks very supportive and not like the panel moderator has to be the gatekeeper all the time. But I will tell you, unless the panel moderator sets that tone, probably not going to happen. Unless you as a panelist set that tone.
And how can the panelists set the tone if the moderator hasn't done it?
I would ask the panel moderator if it's okay to be conversational. I would either one-on-one in your one-on-one conversations or in the group, as the group is meeting up right before they get on stage, go, is this a conversation? Like, just check your assumptions and then check with the other panelists. Like, are they okay with making this more conversational versus can I interrupt you? That's kind of like, no, don't interrupt me. Like, that's rude. But if it's a conversation, you know, it's like, oh, that looks interesting. And it's like, okay.
Panelist who is preparing to be on the panel, they have their conversation with the moderator ahead of time. They do a little bit of practice, a little bit of thinking about the questions. Should they rehearse some of their answers?
You know, I would say that depends on the topic. It depends on the legality. Like, there's some things that you need to run past legal. There's some things that maybe it's new for you to express. Maybe you have a new, you've got a new best practice that maybe you're not as comfortable sharing. So you might want to do a little bit of practice. I think that that's reasonable.
And what about, how does a panelist react to a question that they don't want to answer?
Oh, well, George, you do media training. You flip the question, right? You're far more the pro than I am, but you know, nobody says you have to answer the direct question, right?
And Kristen, I think you just demonstrated that one of the techniques there is to, yes, throw the question back and turn it around. And you're right. And my suggestion, my advice to people is when you get a question, and it could be the moderator just is grasping for the next question. They may not be ill-intentioned. They simply are just not in the moment. And that's where you help out the interviewer or the moderator. And you say, well, Kristen, the real question is, or what I think our audience would like to know is, so you move it forward without embarrassing them and without fighting back. Does that make sense to you?
You know, I think that's excellent advice, George. You're a rock star.
Well, once in a while, we all have our chance to shine. Kristen, what about the moderator of the panel? We've been focusing on the panelists, but I'm curious. So I'm an executive, and I've been invited to be a moderator on a panel. What homework do I need to do?
I would unabashedly say read my two books on how to moderate a panel and how to make your panels more interesting and engaging. And George, a lot of the work that I do is with executives who are asked, like, can I moderate? I've been asked to moderate a panel. Oh my gosh, what does that actually mean? And it's probably a little bit more work than you thought you were signing up for. But a lot of it is researching who's going to be in your audience. What are the issues that they care about? Researching your panelists. What perspectives do they bring in, and tease out what of those things that are going to be of most interest to the audience. And then it's really about researching your topic too. Now, here's the challenge, George. Here's the challenge. As executives, we get asked to moderate a panel about something that we have a lot of knowledge about. So then you have to be very careful that you're moderating the discussion and not being a panelist yourself. And that is a harder thing to do. It's a lot easier for me as a professional panel moderator to moderate things that I don't have an axe to grind. I don't have a position. I get really smart very quickly on the topic. The panelists and the audience, I put together some really great moderator curated questions and a really good flow that makes it interesting and changes it up and keeps it flowing. And I know how to prompt discussion, but I never weigh in on the content. My job is to moderate the process. So I just warn any executive that's a fine line to cross. And if you do, if like this has happened, is that no panelist can answer the question. And it's awkward. You're like, you know, you have to ask yourself, do I weigh in or do I reframe the question into something that they can answer? And if you feel like, oh, I have to weigh in, stick your toe in the water, weigh in, and then go, thank you, and then come back into your moderator role. Because what happens with a lot of folks is they just, once you wade into the pool, you just keep playing. You just keep participating. Your job is to make sure that there's conversation flowing, getting value for the audience, and you end on time.
And I've seen that happen where the moderator was so in love with what they wanted to impress so much with they knew that they spent most of the time talking and the panelists are sitting there wondering, why are we here?
And would you call that a perfect panel, George?
No. I guess one of the attractions of a panel for the audience is that it's not a speech, which tend to be boring and especially if it's technical. And it's not intended in a panel, I guess it's not intended to cover everything on the topic. I think it's, and tell me if I'm wrong here. I think a panel, the attraction of a panel is that it allows us to open some windows into the topic and see maybe where we want to go deeper later. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think that that's a great possibility. Here's a little interesting factoid. Harry Overstreet, who's an American educator, is the very first one who published the guidelines of what a panel discussion looks like in like the 1930s. And he said the one unforgivable offense is to rise and give a speech. It's not meant to be a speech. So I recommend that you put speeches, presentations, you preload them, and then you bring the panel together for that meaningful discussion, right? So presentations, I think they belong certainly in a meeting format, and you definitely need to get training by the famous George Torok because he knows how to get your intended message across. But it's got no place in a panel. And if somebody actually says, well, you know, why don't you start with a 5-minute presentation on your point of view? Go, why don't you give me a time slot? And we all do 5 because I don't want to sit there for 20 minutes staring off into space while other people are talking. And I'm on the dais. That's just, it's awkward. Don't do that.
Timing. What can a moderator do to keep people on time? And I'll add on to that, what can a moderator do to signal that someone is speaking too long?
Oh, those are two very different questions, but let's take the first one. So I think part of our job is to create an agenda that's got a good flow. So you've got plan A, and if you've done your research on your panelists, so you know the panelists that have diarrhea of the mouth and they're going to go on and on and on and on and on, you need to really in the pre-work go, you need to keep your comments concise and short. We only have 30 minutes. We only have 45 minutes. And here's what's going to happen if you go too long. So I'm always providing a prevention strategy ahead of time. Like, please don't do that, or, you know, keep your comments to 30 seconds or a minute or, you know, whatever's appropriate. You've done your research, you know who's going to be in front of you. Now, let's say somebody is going on and on and on. Okay, there's a bunch of different ways that you can do this, but the easiest one is when they take a breath, go, you know, that's really interesting. Kim, what do you think about what George has just said? Right? And the person will get a little bit snippy at you. I've actually had somebody who came back and said, well, let me finish what I was saying. And I'm like, okay, well, if you're going to be that ballsy dude, okay, fine. But the audience is actually pretty grateful when you do little things that, help manage the time. I always tell the panelists, I'm going to lean forward when I think you need to like wind it up. I will interject in a gracious, like my overriding thing on interventions is just to do it gracefully, but firmly, and do it for the benefit of the audience. You're not trying to make the person look bad. So if you come from that place in your heart, I think most people will go along with what's going on.
When the moderator gets off track or surprises you because they just went down a different tangent, they went somewhere, how can the panelists help the moderator get back on track?
Yeah. So here's a newsflash. Not all panel moderators are skilled. Sometimes you're just going to go, what the heck is going on here? And so I think that as an advocate for the audience, you can say, excuse me, I thought we were here to talk about this topic. Are we going to do that? Because I'm prepared. I actually did that. I was on a panel. Gosh, I think I was in London. All the panelists knew each other. I was the outsider. And they were joking and having a great time. And I'm like, okay, this is 10 minutes in. I'm like, excuse me, are we going to talk about the topic? And it was kind of like, oh. And we started talking about the topic. So I do think that there can just be a question of curiosity, not like, so when are we going to talk about the topic? But it's like, so are we going to talk about it? But that's good. That's just my style.
And I liked it. And I can appreciate that because it's still polite enough, but it's a little bit cheeky. And hey, you know, here's where I thought we're here. Now, I was wondering about, especially in the virtual environment, the moderator might have the ability to mute the microphone. Is that ever something that you would recommend that they do?
You know, I'm not a big fan of that, but sometimes somebody's coughing or there's a dog barking in the background and they're not really paying attention to it. So in a live meeting where you have an AV tech, they will usually keep the microphones open unless you've got a really, really sophisticated big audience, in which case they will open and shut microphones. But for the most part, even the AV techs will keep the microphones open unless there's some rustling or a cough or, you know, something that's distracting. I think the same thing holds true in the virtual environment. You have the ability as the host, but I would use that. I don't know. If you've got a really large panel, that might be appropriate. I like to keep things really simple, George. So as a panel moderator, I want to pay more attention to the conversation than the technical. So here's a tip on that one, is that if you're not like a Zoom queen or a Zoom czar or something, get somebody else to manage the back end side, the technology. I like using the slides to just introduce people and to have everybody and their contact information. But I don't really like using any kinds of slides during a panel either. There might be something that somebody says, oh, can I show this one thing? Because I think it illuminates a point that I'm making. In which case, you know, if you have the technical capability and skill, yeah, go ahead.
How many make the right number for a panel? How do you decide?
Well, I'm biased. I think three is a nice number, but I like four because especially executives, you know, there might be some crisis and somebody can't come. So I think four is the number that I would invite, depending on what the track record is of the panelists.
Invite four, hoping that three actually do show up.
And if four show up, that's fine. That's still doable, but five is tough. And then you get more and more and it's just brutal.
Kristen, you have a resource out there, a book out there to help people with their panels. The book is called, I believe the book is called, and it's not 1, 2, 3, it's 123 Ways to Add Pizzazz to a Panel Discussion. That's 123 Ways to Add Pizzazz to a Panel Discussion. If people want to get a hold of that book, they can find it at the website panel, pizzazz. And pizzazz is like pizza with an extra Z on the end. Kristen, what will they find in that book?
They'll find 123 ways to it's just a bunch of different ways to make a boring panel discussion more interesting, you know, because I think many of us know the mechanics of it. If you're just looking for the mechanics, that's my previous book, Powerful Panels, a step-by-step guide to moderating a lively and informative panel discussion. But if you're looking for like, okay, give me some ideas. Because I think, George, that's what a lot of people face. They go, okay, I want to make it exciting. I want to make it interesting, but how do you do that? What would I do that would make it interesting? And just like a speech, you know, you do keep speech coaching. You think of it in segments. Like there's the introduction segment, then there's the transition, then there's the moderator curated questions, or do you want to mix it up and do some different things? So I think that's all up for game. And depending on the topic, depending on the audience, you know, if you're looking for a little inspiration, there's your book.
Kristen, what's a good way for a panel moderator to wrap up the panel with something better than okay, I guess we're done now?
Nick Morgan wrote a great book. He wrote a book called Give a Speech, Change the World, right? So he said the only reason why you would rise and stand and give a speech is because you want to change something, whether it's change people's opinions, thoughts, feelings, change their actions, behaviors. And I do think that the same thing holds true for panel discussions, not panel presentations, but panel discussions, in that why did you have this panel discussion? So I usually like to end with a lightning round where we're going to go down the line. And just if there's one thing you want people to take away, or if there's one thing that we should be aware of is a future trend, or what's the one thing, fill in the blank, and then say, I hope you got some great value, great takeaway. These panelists will be here to answer any of your further questions out in the hall or wherever they're going to be. Have a great day. That's a nice little bow.
Got it. Yes. Tie it all up like that. Kristen, in wrapping up, if you could give advice to an executive who has been on a couple, maybe a few panels, and they'd like to take more advantage of that. And what they really want is they want to shine as a panelist so they get invited to more. What can they do to shine?
Just do a good job in support of the audience. But I'm gonna layer on top of that one. If you want to be invited to more panels, I would recommend a couple of things. Number one is if you can get your hands on an audio recording or a video recording, that would be awesome, so that you can look at it objectively and ask yourself, maybe get a coach to help you look at it objectively and ask yourself, what did I do well that I want to reinforce? And what are some things that I would have done differently? Because that's how we get better, is feedback. I love the term feedback is the breakfast of champions. You want to be an amazing panelist that gets referred back, or that other people who are bringing on panelists, then you just get better at your craft. The other thing that I would recommend is that you get, you ask the person who brought you on, who asked you to be a panelist, and you say, you know, I would like more experiences doing this. Who else do you know is having panels in the same genre of what I can speak on? And you'd be surprised.
Positive advice, because I'm sure that a moderator is bound to know about other panels and other moderators and other guests.
I would say that's the panel moderator and the meeting organizer. And the other panelists. Like, don't keep yourself a hidden secret. Like, if you want something in this world, put it out there. Like, this is what I'm looking for. Anybody know anybody who's looking for panelists? I can do that.
A good reminder of if we want something, we need to market. We need to put our message out there that, hey, here's what we got. Here's what we're looking for.
Just ask. The world is an amazing place. It brings you what you need.
And a brilliant note to wrap up on. My guest today is Kristen Arnold, reminding you that when it comes to a panel, it's not about, don't show up and throw up. Instead, be intentional.
Exactly.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.